Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And we remind you at the outset that we're brought to you today by Donors Trust. Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, and additional donor privacy. Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. A little bit more on Donors Trust a little bit later in our podcast. And Jim, we start with the good martini, and we've been pretty rough on the mainstream media, but once in a while they produce some pretty interesting stories about different things in the political realm. The autopsies on how things went wrong for losing candidates are always fascinating, and Politico has the story on what went wrong for Hillary Clinton, the title, How Clinton Lost Michigan and Blew the Election. Everybody could see Hillary Clinton was cooked in Iowa. So when a week and a half out, the Service Employees International Union started hearing anxiety out of Michigan, union officials decided to reroute their volunteers, giving a desperate team on the ground around Detroit some hope. They started prepping meals and organizing hotel rooms. SEIU, which had wanted to go to Michigan from the beginning but had been ordered not to, dialed Clinton's top campaign aides to tell them about the new plan, according to several people familiar with the call. Brooklyn was furious. Turn that bus around, the Clinton team ordered SEIU. Those volunteers needed to stay in Iowa to fool Donald Trump into competing there, not drive to Michigan, where the Democrats' models projected a 5-point win through the morning of Election Day. Michigan's organizers were shocked. It was the latest case of Brooklyn ignoring on-the-ground intel and pleas for help in a race that they felt slipping away at the end. They also talk about how Clinton was thought to have this vaunted ground game. They were turning people away who wanted to go door-to-door. They weren't leaving literature at people's doors because that's not how people end up deciding votes. People know Hillary Clinton. A little bit piece of a flyer is not going to make the difference for them, Jim. And basically, from the top down, that was kind of the arrogant attitude throughout this campaign. Shouldn't shock us, since we know that's kind of the way Hillary Clinton views the world. But to watch it blow up in her face like this is particularly delicious.
Greg, how much do you think the Clinton campaign didn't want this story to come out until after the Electoral College made their decision? Right? I mean, they've got this nice little narrative going of, oh, Russia hacked the election. And, oh, you know, if it hadn't been for that nefarious, scary, paranoid, schizophrenic James Comey making his decisions, and if it hadn't been for the sinister Vladimir Putin filling up Facebook with all this fake news, she would have won the race. And then you look at that, you hear this story. No, Tussis, we totally have Michigan. It's in the bag. It is locked down. There's absolutely no reason for it. Let's spend resources in states we kind of know we're not going to win. We just want to make Trump spend money there. Yeah, that worked out well. you know, like we kind of laugh. You know, we kind of understand why. On the one hand, it's somewhat respectful for Hillary Clinton to really not make a lot of public appearances. She's given one or two speeches, and that Biden appears she's comfortable receding into the background of American politics and not taking an active role. I saw that apparently the other day it was Reuters or some wire service said she, quote, Hillary Clinton comes out of the woods to attend a theater performance. like now she's this crazy old lady living in the woods, you know. I don't know about you, Greg. I can picture like really hard, really scary ghost stories for Chappaqua Quids about a generation from now. And they say every election night you can hear her wailing, I shouldn't have had that email system. But so the other thing, you hear stories like this. Maybe she's not coming out very much because of stories like this and the kind of we kind of all instinctively knew that they were caught flat-footed and really didn't understand the state of the race and really kind of were wildly over-optimistic about how they were doing. But in this case, man, oh, man, they really were turning down help where they genuinely needed it. And would that have flipped the state of Michigan? We don't know. It probably would have helped at least some. Would that have been enough to flip the Electoral College? Not by itself. But, I mean, if this was the attitude that the Clinton campaign was taking towards not just Michigan, but, you know, Wisconsin, where they didn't campaign at all in the last couple of months, their efforts in – they did campaign a lot in Pennsylvania but clearly thought they were doing pretty good there. You know, did you a whole bunch of the swing states. For a while, it looked like she was going to be competitive in Ohio. It looked like she was going to be competitive in Florida. It looked like she was going to be competitive in North Carolina. One of the reasons folks like myself were so surprised was the fact that we didn't think every swing state would kind of swing the same way. Now we're looking at this from the outside. You'd think the Clinton campaign would have more data and better ability to measure all this than anybody, and they clearly was blindsided as anyone. So kind of a painful chuckle, and this really should pour some cold water on this Russia hacked the election talk we've been hearing.
Yeah, and they talk about the enthusiasm gap in here as well. Obviously, the Trump voters were very motivated. The Hillary voters, some of them were, some of them weren't. But the money quote here is from Donnie Fowler, who was consulting for the Democratic National Committee during the final months of the campaign. Quote, they believed they were more experienced, which they were. They believed they were smarter, which they weren't. They believed they had better information, which they didn't. So a lot of conventional wisdom shredded in that story. Jim, let's move on to the bad martini now, and it is bad. We saw it coming for a number of days here. The rebels in Aleppo were defending a smaller and smaller area, and yesterday Russia, curiously, announcing that Aleppo had been taken by the Syrian government, and then now there are reports from the UN that at least 82 civilians were murdered, including about a dozen children, more women than that. So now we'll see what kind of horrific war crimes are perpetrated upon the people who tried to flee but got caught, or the people that stayed there and got stuck. This all goes back a number of years now, 500,000 people dead. The red line came and went during that time. Here's the response of U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, yesterday upon hearing the news.
To the Assad regime, Russia, and Iran, your forces and proxies are carrying out these crimes. Your barrel bombs and mortars and airstrikes have allowed the militia in Aleppo to encircle tens of thousands of civilians in your ever-tightening noose. It is your noose. Three member states of the UN contributing to a noose around civilians. It should shame you. Instead, by all appearances, it is emboldening you. You are plotting your next assault. Are you truly incapable of shame? Is there literally nothing that can shame you?
Jim, as you lead off the morning jolt today, you point out that there are no real easy answers here. We don't know necessarily who we can trust in these situations and who might even be more radical than the Syrian regime. We saw that in different aspects of the Arab Spring. But what we do know is that there will be horrific human rights violations here, most likely in the wake of this. We know that Russia was up to absolutely no good. They weren't there to fight ISIS. They were there to prop up Assad. And the Iranians, of course, having their fingers in this pie as well. So Samantha Power is right, but ultimately this amounts to a strongly worded letter way too late.
Greg, does it feel like every, let's say, 2 months or so, the U.S. media pays attention to Syria?
About that, yeah.
I mean, like, we get a burst of coverage, usually a lot of horrible graphic images, cities destroyed, refugees running through the streets, explosions. And we can tell this is really, really terrible. But we've been having this coverage for the better part of 5 years now. And the only time there was really any serious talk about a U.S. action about that was obviously the red line, the first reports about the use of chemical weapons. The U.K. Parliament said, nope, we're not doing this. This is too much like Iraq. We're not getting involved. We have doubts about the use of WMD talk in a Middle Eastern country. Yeah, we're never doing this again. And so I think a lot of folks in leaders of the Western world, you know, countries that really not, you know, back, Greg, you and I are not that old. We can remember 1991 where the whole world kind of unified about Saddam Hussein taking over Kuwait, even Russia. And we, the world just is kind of like, well, this will take care of itself. This will burn itself out. This war will end eventually. Well, here we are. And look, maybe with Aleppo falling, this will be a turning point. It will mean that an unbelievably brutal regime that uses chemical weapons is winning instead of a motley crew of rebellious forces that includes ISIS, al-Nusra Front, and all kinds of unsavory people. I'm not going to pretend to have all the answers on Syria. I am going to observe that the world wanted a less interventionist America after the Iraq War. You and I remember there were crowds, the biggest protests in history, and world capitals all around the world was against the Iraq War. And since we saw this charnel house in Syria, we're now up to probably more than 500,000 people killed. And the other thing that gets me is the chemical weapons use over and over and over again. Sarin, mustard gas, chlorine. Nothing really seems to stir the world's outrage the way that the Iraq war did. Like, you know, we can't let those neocons do something like that. But, you know, Assad killing lots and lots of people, or ISIS using chemical weapons 50-some times, we're just going to shrug our shoulders at that. It really is pretty abominable, and it really is utterly awful. It's bad enough to have to witness this. It's bad enough to live in countries that have some capabilities to take more action and choose not to. But to hear Samantha Power, who basically wrote the book on genocide, who basically is ripped into the Clinton administration, George H.W. Bush, every preceding presidency, about how morally irresponsible they were with genocide in places like Rwanda and Saddam against the Kurds, and example after example after example. Now she's UN ambassador, and all she can do is say to the Russians and the Syrians and the Iranians how shameful they are, and say, does anything shame them? No, Samantha! You'd think you'd know this by now, but here we are. It's a typically grim note for the Obama administration to go out on, arguably his most, certainly his bloodiest error in judgment. And I think we're going to look back on this and, you know, shake our head and say, somebody should have done something about that. Yeah, somebody, except nobody wanted to.
Yeah, very well stated. And leadership in that situation, even if our forces weren't going to go there, which I don't think Americans wanted. You remember that in the debate that Congress was about to have before Kerry struck the no more chemical weapons deal with the Russians. That really turned out well. The American people had no appetite for it, but there was no real effort to get anybody else to get deeply involved into it either. So amazing. Jim, tough to transition out of that, but we do want to let you know about our friends at Donors Trust and how they can help you with your end-of-the-year charitable giving, because it is the end of the year. This month is when almost one-third of all charitable giving occurs. Do you have a plan in place to make sure your charitable giving gets done easily and in alignment with your values? Donors Trust is the community foundation for the Liberty Movement, offering all the benefits of any other donor-advised fund you might check out, such as simplified giving, tax benefits, plus additional donor privacy. But only Donors Trust shares your commitment to conservative principles.
A donor-advised fund at Donors Trust can start with your fully tax-deductible gift of just $10,000. Donors Trust clients are united in the belief that private philanthropy does a better job of improving the nation than government. So if you believe in using charity to promote liberty, then you owe it to yourself to look at Donors Trust.
Go to donorstrust.org/ricochet to get your no-commitment free prospectus. Like we said, no commitment. You'll learn how a donor-advised fund works and how it can simplify your giving, save you in taxes, and protect your giving in new ways. You'll also receive bonus content to help you be more strategic in your giving. Again, visit donorstrust.org/ricochet right now to download a free copy of their helpful guide, No Commitment, donorstrust.org/ricochet. Jim, on to our crazy martini now, and we had a lot of different options here, and we can talk about a couple of them, all related to the left's complete inability to accept what happened on November 8th, and that Donald Trump is, in fact, the president-elect of the United States, and he will be the 45th president of the United States. One of the headlines that we saw yesterday, I saw it in The Hill, but it was in other places as well, 40 electors now want to get an intel briefing before the Electoral College meets on Monday, December 19th. 40. Hey, that's more than you need to whittle away Trump's lead past the majority in the Electoral College. But then in paragraph 6, it points out that 39 of them are already from states that are pledged to Hillary. So there's really only the one guy we talked about a week or two ago who's not going to vote for Trump, even though he pledged to down in Texas. But our big focus today is on our old friend Keith Olbermann, formerly of ESPN, MSNBC, Fox Sports, current ESPN again. Now he's with GQ doing commentary, I assume, pretty much.
And also, by the way, formerly of a Trump property, wasn't he?
He used to live at Trump Tower. Yeah, yeah, that's exciting. He has decided that Trump cannot take office. So he has said that Trump is simply a puppet of the Russians, and then that should be obvious from the evidence that we've seen. He is not okay with President Obama ordering a full review. He wants all the information declassified now that the CIA has. And why? Must he do it right now?
There is no time for a full review or a measured analysis or recommendations to prevent interference in our future elections, because permitting Donald Trump to assume the office of president reduces the chance that we will have any future elections. The nation and all of our freedoms hang by a thread, and the military apparatus of this country is about to be handed over to scum who are beholden to scum, Russian scum. As things are today, January 20th will not be an inauguration, but rather the end of the United States as an independent country. It will not be a peaceful change of power. It will be a usurpation, and the usurper has no validity, no credibility, and no authority under the Constitution. This is a reality that will become the only reality until this country rids itself of Donald John Trump. He is not a president. He is a puppet put in power by Vladimir Putin. And those who ignore these elemental existential facts, Democrats or Republicans, are traitors to this country and will immediately and forever after be held accountable.
Well, it's good to see that he's keeping everything under control there, Jim. I'm pretty sure we'll still be an independent country, and I'm pretty sure once he's sworn in, he does have authority under the Constitution. Hopefully, this is not the way most people on the left are looking at this, but when you're looking at how desperately they're glomming on to the Russia story, the fake news story, and everything else in hopes that somehow it'll lead to Trump never becoming president, you got to wonder if we're on the brink of a massive mental health crisis in this country.
Okay, like you and I, you know, okay, Olbermann sounds crazy. We've been saying that for a really long time, but was that a little bit frightening, Greg?
He's
like,
losing
like
it.
He really has. You know, like I don't want to say, dear Secret Service, you have to check out Keith Olbermann. I think if Keith Olbermann started running towards the Trump Tower and trying to get into the lobby, people would kind of recognize him. But if he really was like had completely gone cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, he is no longer mentally functioning normally and intended to harm Donald Trump. Greg, would he have said anything different in that? Right? I mean, like this, he really sounds around the bend on that. And we could point out, you know, oh, you know, he's a Russian scum. Greg, where was he in 2012? The 80s called. They want their foreign policy back. And Ron, I mean, I'll have to go back and check, but I'll bet a donut that Keith Olbermann was not saying, oh, Romney's making a good point here. Yeah, Obama really has been too soft on Russia here.
Well, he's more flexible that year, too, as you're
now. That you know, Vladimir Putin and Russia are the biggest, baddest, scariest thing in the whole wide world. And this whole idea there's no time and this is not going to be, you know, like honest to goodness, like I don't think there's going to be any major incidents at the inauguration. But if God forbid there is, God forbid somebody sets off a bomb or takes a gun or something like that. Like we've had this national panic over fake news. I don't know. If somebody takes a shot at Trump, is Olbermann's stuff any more or less incendiary than what Alex Jones says? I really want to get a clear measuring stick on this, because if we're going to start blaming Facebook for the nut job who goes into the pizza place up in Adams Morgan, at what point is somebody trying to take a shot against Trump could qualify for something like that? Because that sounded pretty darn incendiary to my ears. But listeners' mileage may vary. So thank you for bringing that to my attention, Greg. I think I'm now going to see, I just envision, you know, Keith Olbermann trying to lead the counter revolution, you know, trying to put out barricades in central Manhattan. And, for anybody else who thought they were having a tough time with the election year, man, oh man, Olbermann is far around the bend.
You usually need viewers for a revolution to really kick off, yeah. Though.
Also, is this really the image Gentleman's Quarterly wanted to go with? Did that seem gentlemanly to you?
Yeah, they do a better job talking about whatever it is they normally talk about, but fashion or fitness or whatever, because Keith Olbermann is not the image that they should be going for, because he's been such a good image for every previous employer.
Actually, you know what? You know what's going to happen next, Greg? You know the next job for Keith Olbermann?
What?
Coach of the Los Angeles Rams. Kind of the Jeff Fisher of sports broadcasting.
That would be hilarious. Wow. Keith Olbermann, thanks for bringing us some laughs and scaring us all at the same time today. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. And please check out our friends at Donors Trust. DonorsTrust.org/ricochet is where you need to go to download a free copy of their free prospectus. There's no commitment. DonorsTrust.org/ricochet. And please join us on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.